Coming up on show 788, Lordstown say they can produce 600,000 EVs every single year. Stick around and I'll tell you more. Plus on the podcast today, why you should buy a certified pre-owned EV. Tesla launches Fallout Shelter and a new in-car video game with an over-the-air update. The Model S does go 400 miles, Bjorn says so. And a change to baking in the performance of the Model 3, at least in the US configurator. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. My name is Martin Lee. Going through every EV story so you don't have to. And thank you, as always, to MyEV.com for helping make the show. I couldn't do it without them. Couldn't do it without you on Patreon, too. So everyone who's an exec producer or above, I will give you a mention, as always, at the end of Sunday's show, at the end of today. Well, Lordstown Motors is using the same manufacturing delay caused by coronavirus to reconfigure the Lordstown assembly plant that it bought from GM last year to build out its Endurance electric pickup truck. It expects to manufacture 30 of the pre-production trucks before the end of the year, says Steve Hanley for Clean Technica. The CEO of Lordstown is Steve Burns, and he previously founded Workhorse. He says he expects to build 20,000 electric trucks next year. They're going to hire 600 workers to make that possible, and that is the tip of their ambitious iceberg. The Lordstown factory could build 400,000 cars a year at its peak, but Steve Burns has been talking to the Detroit Free Press and telling them that because EVs have so many fewer parts and components, it's actually possible to build 600,000 electric trucks or SUVs by Lordstown every single year. Now, he does have a turn of phrase he likes to use. He likes to say that the Endurance has only four moving parts. That's the four wheels. You see, that's because they use, at Lordstown, they're going to be using electric hub motors with the motors embedded into the wheels. The first production vehicle to use in-wheel motors pioneered by the company Elaf, I think I pronounced that. And now the price of the Lordstown Motors car starts at $52,500. The Endurance is going to be the model that you order with 600 horsepower on tap. It'll do 250 miles. It'll tow 7,500 pounds. It's got room for five inside rather than the Tesla Cybertruck 6. It's got AC outlets for power tools when you're at a remote location and the ability to recharge their battery in 30 minutes to 95% on a level 3 DC fast charger. Really looking forward to seeing the Endurance pickup truck. Really looking forward to all of the pickup trucks that are coming because a couple of reasons. First of all, these are in many cases working vehicles, but I do understand there's a bit of a cultural shift between the two countries I'm talking about. Where I live, pickup trucks are utility vehicles. Like in Australia, you call them utes. They are very much, you own a pickup because you do work with it. I do appreciate the cultural divide where in the US people own pickup trucks because they're just cool. And you know, you use them at the weekend to do leisure activities and you know, they never visit a building site or a working yard in their life. However, I'm excited about trucks because many of them are working vehicles, but also because it's just a whole new form factor for EVs. We've had big luxury cars, we've had small city concept cars that seat one and look crazy, but trucks have always been a little bit elusive, and so I'm looking forward to, in a year's time or so, having some really compelling trucks on the market. Moving on, and we're currently enjoying a bit of a heat wave here in the UK. Where I'm recording right now, it's 27.4 degrees inside this room. That's because my little studio sits at the bottom of the garden. It's an old converted flat-roofed garage. So it's got a felt roof on it, and it soaks up the sun. So it doesn't take a lot of heat to get really baking hot in here. However, it's not 27 outside. It's about 23, 24 degrees outside today, I would guess. And so if you've got solar, got some PV in a sunny climate, you know what it's like to generate your own electricity. But in this country, Northern Hemisphere, it's always cloudy on the sunniest of days. It's always cloudy. People say, can solar even work in somewhere like Great Britain? Yes, it really can. It really, really can. And if it works here, let me tell you, it'll work where you live, because it's always cloudy here. Well, Britain's largest solar farm is capable of generating enough clean electricity to power 91,000 homes, and it's poised to receive the green light from government ministers this week. According to the Guardian newspaper, the subsidy-free renewables park will reach a capacity of 350 megawatts, and they'll do that by installing 880,000 solar panels, some of them as big as tall as a bus. They're going to be big old panels across, well, not the individual panels, but the arrays they're building. It's going to look at about 900 acres, 364 hectares of land, of farmland in the Kent countryside. Careful how I say that one. Well, the UK's growing fleet of solar panels has produced record levels of clean electricity in recent weeks, reaching fresh highs of 9.68 gigawatts last month, and helping the UK energy system to its longest stretch without coal-fired power since the Industrial Revolution. We recently crossed over something like 1,000 hours coal-free in this country, and with the good weather continuing, and it looks like that's going to stay that way. The renewables industry believes UK solar power capacity could rise from where it is at the moment to 27 gigawatts by the end of the decade. That's after the UK government has officially dropped a block which had prevented solar farms and onshore wind projects from competing in subsidy contract auctions. And that's a really big deal. Solar and onshore wind are two incredibly, incredibly cheap ways of producing electricity. I will say that when we want to charge our electric vehicles from clean, green power, there's no better way of doing it. I am not immune to the fact, though, that renewables aren't always on tap the way that a nuclear power station produces that base load. So whenever we talk about solar power, we do have to talk about storage. And let's get those two things moving in step, moving in tandem. And I can't wait for loads of renewables to come online over the next decade, but also combined with a ton of storage. And what role will our cars play in that storage solution? I don't know. Nobody has the answers yet. Plenty of people say they do, and plenty are taking a guess, but I'm really looking forward to finding out. Well, the UK-based company Liberty Global Ventures and Zook Capital have announced a new joint venture partnership, and they've called it Liberty Charge. Named Liberty Charge. Pretend I got it right the first time. The partnership will roll out on-street charging points for EVs in residential areas across the UK, says Electrive. A partnership with Virgin Media supports Liberty Global's efforts in the space of charging infrastructure, as the Virgin Media Park and Charge project aims to deploy 1,200 charging sockets by early next year. Moving on, and I mentioned this at the start of the show, choosing a certified pre-owned EV is one way to mitigate the risk of buying a used electric vehicle. The CPO system can be a very good way to buy electric vehicles. Car maker-sponsored, dealership-administered CPO programs offer extended warranties for the electric powertrain and components, and that could provide some peace of mind for owners who are spending big money on an unfamiliar technology. I must confess that when I bought our first EV that was 18 months old, I liked having the remainder of that 3-year warranty on it. And when we bought a brand new car last year, and no, we don't lease it, no, we can't give it back if it goes wrong, yes, we do own all of it, there's no finance on that car. When we bought a new car, we bought the new Zoe last June, I think we did, then I must admit, one of the considerations that I had, apart from, if I buy a new car, am I going to have massive depreciation? And I ran all the numbers on that, and to the best of my ability at the time, I thought, well, probably not. If you buy a new diesel car and you drive it off the dealer's lot, I mean, good luck getting back, what, 60% if you turned around and went back into the dealer and said, have it back, buy it back immediately. Nobody wants a diesel. But with EVs, I must admit, the prices are rock solid, so that was a consideration. But also the warranty, and that did cross my mind. And so buying it from as new with a warranty, it offered me peace of mind, because the only thing that can really go wrong, I know there's various mechanical bits and drop links and stuff on the Zoe, but the only thing that can really go wrong that's mega bucks, well, that would be warrantied. And look, I don't even own the battery on that, because it's a battery lease with Renault. So I like that protection buying used. I like that protection buying new as well. But if you are buying used, and many people are buying a used EV, we did for our first one, and you know, we probably will for our next one as well, we will definitely look to have some sort of warranty that covers the whole vehicle, and particularly the powertrain, and within that, the drivetrain as well. Most companies, says Car and Driver website, that build and sell EVs have a separate warranty to cover the battery and the electric motor. Well, the industry has mostly coalesced around an 8-year, 100,000-mile warranty for new vehicles with EV powertrains, although you know, there are some overachievers. Hyundai does offer a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty for its new hybrids and EVs. Nissan said a couple of years ago that Leaf batteries would last an estimated 12 years longer than the actual cars they're powering. When the metal has long corroded away and the rust has set in to the Leafs that are currently driving around, the batteries will go on and on and on and on. Tesla says it's working on a battery that lasts a million miles. Well, good luck having the typical car that does 6 or 8 or 10,000 miles a year. Good luck having all of those bits last a million miles, as the battery's going to do. When's the last time you saw a passenger car with a million miles on the clock on its original powertrain? Yeah, didn't think so. We're moving on, and Tesla is starting to push a new software update that includes the video game Fallout Shelter, Tesla Theater improvements, and much more as well, says Electrek. Now we learn that Tesla is starting to deploy the video game in its vehicles as part of their 2020.20 software update, currently being pushed to early access owners. According to Electrek, last year Tesla added Xbox controller support for its arcade games. You will need an Xbox controller with a USB cable. Tesla did just tell them that Fallout Shelter currently doesn't support the Xbox controller, unlike Tesla's racing game, which works with the Xbox controller. You can only use the touchscreen for Fallout Shelter. I must do that actually with my PC. I've just spent the last few weeks upgrading the various components of my desktop machine, so I'm now fit to do video. We'll see where that goes. However, it does mean that I have de facto ended up with a really good gaming machine because I spec'd it to do video editing, which is, I don't know, they're subtly different, but either way, I probably should have a little play on some games when I get a spare 5 minutes. See, I did a joke when I get some spare time. Yeah, good luck with that, having a little baby around the house. Tesla say that Fallout Shelter puts you in control of a state-of-the-art underground vault from Vault Tech. Build the perfect vault, they say, and keep your dwellers happy and protect them from the dangers of the wasteland. So if you're playing some games in the Tesla, that's what you'll be doing. With the new software release as well, you can now play, pause and skip video playback with your steering wheel controls in theatre mode. And as usual, theatre mode is only available when your car is in park, so you can't be barreling down the road and watching things on the big screen. Tesla's Model S does 400 miles, not officially according to the EPA. It fell just short of that. Tesla and the EPA are still fighting that one out because they left the door. Well, Tesla say the data on the car says the key was left in the car, door was left ajar overnight, and that runs the battery down because it's waiting for driver. And with that power loss on the EPA test, it would have hit 400 miles. We'll see where that one goes. However, this was done by the Norwegian EV reviewer Bjorn Nyland. He got the latest Tesla Model S long range, the Raven Edition. It was dry when he tested it, 16 degrees out. Lucky git. Wish it was 16 degrees here. I could do with it cooling off. He was running it on Michelin Pilot Sport 4s, and he did a constant 90 kilometers an hour. And the capacity that he got out of the battery from being topped up to being empty was 92.7 kilowatt hours. Obviously, we know the Model S has a 100 kilowatt hour battery, but he got 92.7 usable out of it on that day. And how far did he go? 400 miles. He didn't quite drive 400 miles. He had some left, so he's done some calculations of what he could have done. 644 kilometres, 400 miles. There you go. I do trust his numbers, trust his figures. And he's got no skin in the game. He just wants to tell the truth. If it was 399, he would have said it's 399. But there you go. Model S does 400 miles. Now, this has always been the case here, but it looks like the configurator around the world is changing a little bit. Tesla is deciding to bake in the Model 3 performance upgrade pack. And it was one of those things that I always had to remind myself if I was listening to other podcasts or watching things on YouTube, and particularly the American shows would talk about the PUP, the performance upgrade pack. Oh, they talk about sleeper cars, like the quick ones that you can't tell are quick. We never had that option. And if we did, it didn't last long, because for as long as I can remember, there's only been three cars on the configurator of the UK Tesla site. And if you go performance, you get all the performance bits. There's no way to get the performance motors without the bigger wheels and the brakes and the spoiler. So, whereas you could split that out, it was always a free upgrade, but some people chose not to do the free upgrade. They wanted the smaller wheels to get better range. And Tesla has taken yet another step forward with this in streamlining their vehicle production. I understand why that was the case with the UK design studio, because you have to make the cars and ship them halfway around the world, and so you want to minimise the specifications. They've been doing away in America, though, with the sleeper performance Model 3s. According to Teslarati, the update, which happened recently, as of last Sunday, they reckon a week ago, means that with the Model 3 performance, you can no longer optionally select the performance upgrade pack. It's the 20-inch performance wheels, it's the brakes, it's the spoiler, it's the lowered suspension, it's the Ryan McCaffrey aluminium pedals, track mode, and increased top speed from 145 to 162 miles an hour. Whilst the upgrade was always free, some buyers chose not to. They wanted more range. They wanted to go to 322 miles of range on the 18-inch aero wheels. But we've never had that option for as long as I can remember. So welcome to the club of having less choice. Overall, probably a very good thing. For their efficiency. Finally, with Tesla Battery Day around the corner, the focus of late has been on million-mile batteries. And yes, everyone's getting in on the game of using that phrase ahead of Tesla's Battery Day. While such a battery would be big news, what if Tesla has something else up its sleeve, like more energy density that will extend the range significantly? Of course, they want to reduce the costs, but with all of the news that's coming, we do think that energy density will take a bump, and that means getting more miles, more stored energy in the same physical space as before. And if it happens to do a million miles, that's great. Says Yahoo News, the Model S will do 400 miles now, but the battery tech in it, in many ways, dates back to 2012. So imagine what it would happen with Tesla's Battery Day if they hit the achieved energy density that some people are talking about. It could lead to a 700-mile Model 3. Well, that would be doubling and a bit what you can get out of a Model 3 at the moment, but does anybody even need an EV that can go 700 miles? Wouldn't you be better off having half, if you had a 700 mile battery, have half the battery size and save the money and the weight? Or do you want the option of having 700 miles? I do think in Tesla's case, they would go for the big number because they're all about slapping down combustion cars and having EVs as halo cars. So faster, more efficient, and better in every way. And so, yeah, if they can say, oh, how far does your diesel go? Oh, on a full tank, 600 miles. Yeah, our electric does 700. I wonder if they would put a model on sale that would at least hit that headline figure to be a halo car. I'm not sure we need it, but I'm not going to kick it out of bed if I've got the option. All right, let's talk about question of the week. And here are your answers to question of the week this week. So Dyson backed out of their EV project, which they put £500 million into, but they just couldn't make it to go on sale for less than 150 grand, and they wanted to make an affordable car, and it wasn't for them. So I was asking you, what is wrong with selling expensive EVs? Were they right to can the project, or should they have carried on? Well, Jan from eMobility Norway, and one of the very kind supporters of this podcast that makes this show happen, said, I think rather than giving up, Dyson should have invited partners to the project or rewritten the scope of it. The result wasn't as first planned, especially as the price was too high for the mainstream market and the big market. Probably the most considerable cost was the battery, as the range was close to 1,000 kilometres. That's four times more than that's needed for most users. That range tells me they wanted to make a replacement of a fossil car rather than making a modern EV. What if Dyson had made the battery smaller to reduce the price, just without a record-breaking range figure? They could have made it modular, giving customers the possibility to choose the size depending on the need and the wallet. So here's one for 50, here's one for 100, here's one for 150,000. You choose how far you want to go. It's a really, really good point. Rajiv Narayan says, as great as it would have been to see the Dyson, they probably made the right decision not to release it. At that price point, it would have been a hard sell, as they lack the branding that Porsche or Mercedes-Benz have, but I hope they don't give up, he says. They should license the MEB platform, use existing battery tech from SK Innovation or LG. More than good enough for EVs, and then someday, when their solid-state batteries pan out and take off, then they could bring those to market. AJ Tarquino in Ohio, USA, says, I'm sure there are plenty of customers that would and could have afforded this vehicle. With improvements being made to range and longevity of the battery, shouldn't it help drive down the cost of the Dyson cars and make it affordable for more people? And couldn't Dyson spring off their expensive platform like Tesla did to make a lower cost production model that would then draw the interest of the average EV buyer? Lee Brown in Scotland says, yeah, Dyson should have continued their research. They're pioneers in battery technology, and all the associated costs with EV R&D would have come down in price over time, and they could have then produced a smaller, more affordable EV. I've read they'd quite a lot of lost grant money given to them by the UK government. We'll have to pay it back. I don't know. I hadn't read that. But if they were given grants to develop solid-state battery technology by UK government, I don't think you probably have to pay them back. A grant is probably a grant. But I don't know if they were given that free money. I'm sure they were given incentives to produce as much of the R&D in this country, even though it was never going to be made here. It was going to be made in Asia. John Frewith says, I'm all for Elon's corporate mission, which goes something along the lines of accelerating the transition of transportation to renewable energy. As such, it doesn't make sense to only make EVs as expensive toys for the rich. If we are to make a significant progress in transitioning to a cleaner, greener planet, it's essential that EVs reach price parity with combustion cars. Not only personal vehicles, but all commercial and industrial vehicles will become battery electric cars. Brenton Pott says, I'm very disappointed that Dyson cancelled their EV. I sure wouldn't have been able to afford one, but I reason that Tesla's first Roadster was exclusively for the affluent enthusiasts, and look where they are now. I believe that the brains and design know-how behind Dyson could have brought something really positive to the EV space, and that would eventually trickle down to something I could afford to dream about. Two positive takeaways, though: they released their progress so other EV makers can be inspired, and James Dyson said he's not against other EV makers using their solid-state battery tech in their own cars. Jeff Murray said, as far as Dyson goes, I think Tesla is a good example where they started out high-priced and used that knowledge to be able to make lower-priced cars for later generations. I think that a company just getting into the market is almost always going to have to use that strategy, especially if they expect to have any kind of quality. And even if they made a good, affordable product first, the low price may very well be seen as cheap as opposed to value. That said, I highly doubt Dyson was in any danger of making an affordable product given their prices on other products. And finally, Philip Troutman says, I was sad to see that the Dyson effort failed. From the outside, it looked great. My wife and I could use an EV with that form factor, but at a reasonable price. However, at this point in the maturation of the EV market, I think the biggest challenge is perceived price. Most people around here, he's in Southern Oregon, seem to think that only rich people can afford an EV. Yeah, we ain't rich. And we've got one. That needs to change, says Philip. And the more high-profile announcements of high-priced EVs isn't going to help. Assuming people were paying attention to the Dyson news at all, I'm sure the announcement that they couldn't build their car at a reasonable price also increased this perception. I want to see EVs continue to fill all the niches in the automotive world, especially a van with decent range. But at this point, some high-profile, affordable options will help. We'll see how VW goes with their rollout. One of the things that I like about your podcast, says Philip, is that you talk about all EVs, from halo cars to compact cars. I certainly do. I like to be manufacturer agnostic. I like to say nice things about everyone when I possibly can and give everyone the benefit of the doubt. I hate saying anything negative about an EV, but I'm not afraid to, Philip, as you say. And of course, this podcast is about all bits of the EV world, really, and that includes infrastructure and how we power them as well. So I thank you very much for your kind words, and thank you for your continued support and listening. Hey, let's set a brand new question of the week this week, and we'll go back to the very first thing I mentioned on today's podcast, and we'll talk about trucks. I'm interested in trucks. What do you want from an EV truck? What are your desired specs from an EV truck? Tell me. It can be about how many it seats, it can be about the utility of it, it can be about, you know, powering things off the grid. It doesn't matter what aspect of it is, but tell me, what are your desired specs for electric trucks when they hit the market? What's your priorities with electric trucks, even if you're not going to be in the market to buy one? What do you think? I'd love to get your email. My address is hello@evnewsdaily.com, and you can always leave a comment on the YouTube show. Thank you, as always, to 227 patrons of the podcast. If you haven't heard about it, there's a website called Patreon, patreon.com/EVNewsDaily, and it's how individuals and companies fund the work that we're doing. Premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Avid Technology, Brightsmith Group for clean tech talent, Porsche of the Village Cincinnati, and Audi of Cincinnati East. My partners are David Allen, OEM Audio of New Zealand, and evpower.co.nz. I hope you're all okay in New Zealand. By the looks of it from the international news that we get, you've coped with it amazingly well through this virus. Paul O'Connor, tryev.com. Gareth Hamer, eMobility Norway. And Bob Boothby from the Millbrook Cottages and Elopement Wedding Venue. Hello to ev-resource.com. And Mia Oppelstrup as well, who did up her support last month, and I'm leaving her name on that list because Mia's brilliant. Alan Robson, Alan Shedd, Alex Banahini, Alexander Frank, Anders Hove, Andrea Jefferson, Asir Khalid, Ashley Hill, Bjard Fuchstack, Brent Kingsford, Brian Thompson, Bruce Bohannon, Charles Hall, Chris Hopkins, Colin Hennessy and Cam ZV, Craig Coles, Damian Davis, Darren Bird, Darren Feach, Darren Sun and Yorkshire EVs, Dave Dewson, David Barkman, David Finch, David Partington, David Prescott, Derek Riley, and the Dublin EV Owners Club. Don McAllister from ScreencastsOnline.com. I get that Mac knowledge that you need. Enrico Stefan Shillo, Eru Kyun Nyombi, Frederick Rovick, Free Jewel, who's James, Gene Rubin, Gilberto Rosado, Jeff Lowe, hello to Headley Wright, Ian Griffiths, Ian Sear, Ian Watty Watkins, Jack Oakley, James Storr, Jerry Allison, Jim Duggan, Jim Morris, John Bailey, John C. Solar, John Lacey from Click Like Video NZ, John, who is Beardy McBeardface and the gang at Kent EVs, John Nodell, Juan Gonzalez, Ken Morris, Kevin Mason, Carl Mann, Lars Dallinger, Lawrence D. Allen, Lee Brown, Luke Cully, Marcel Lohman, Marcel Ward, Mark Bossett, Martin Croft, the Dorset Tradesman, Marty Young, Matt Pissett, Maz Shah, Michael and Luke Turrell, Michael Pastroni, Mike Rogers, Mike Winter, Nathan Gore Brown, and Neil E. Roberts from Sussex EVs, Nigel Miles, Northern Explorers, Ohad Aston, Paul Ridings, Paul Stevenson, Paul Perry, Simpkins, Pete Glass, Pete Gordon, Peter and D. Roberts from Oxen EVs. Hello to Phil Mouchet, Philip Troutman, Pontus Klimblad, Raj Badwell, Rajiv Narayan, Ralph Jensen, Rene Schneider, Rob Cooling, Rob Hermans, Robert Grace, Robin Tanner, Rupert Mitchell, Sari Kangasoja, Seiki Payne, Stephen Penn, Steve John, Thomas J. Tias, The Plug Seeker, and his EV YouTube channel, Tim Gutteridge and William Langhorne. Have a wonderful day. I'll catch you soon. And remember, there's no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.